Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
For your next family vacation, consider Our Beach House, a charming 3-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Well, it was swift, and in these days of pandemic, with various state governors placing restrictions on all kinds of activities, the courts have to be swifter than usual. The U.S. Supreme Court recently ruled against New York Governor Andrew Cuomo's worship restrictions. What is his track record when it comes to not just religious gatherings and the restrictions he imposes, but just the gathering of religious people, maybe out in the street? We're going to talk about that for the next few minutes of Issues Etc. Akiva Shapiro joins us. He's a litigation partner at Gibson Dunn, the law firm that represented the Diocese of Brooklyn in the case. Akiva, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you so much for having me.
Talk about New York Governor Andrew Cuomo's track record when it comes to restrictions for religious gatherings.
Sure. So the reason we brought this case and took it up to the Supreme Court on an emergency basis was because the restrictions that were put in place by Governor Cuomo were both discriminatory against religious gatherings and severe. So when there was a spike in COVID cases in the early fall in certain neighborhoods in New York, Governor Cuomo put in place a set of regulations that singled out houses of worship, regardless of denomination, for special and especially harsh treatment. Specifically, houses of worship and only houses of worship were restricted to 10 people maximum in the synagogue or the church, regardless of capacity. It could be a 500-person church, a 1,000-person church, limited to 10 people in what were called the red zones, the most significant zones, severe zones, and 25 people in the orange zones. And there were no parallel restrictions on any secular businesses or institutions. So only houses of worship were subjected to this 10 or 25 person limitation, which, you know, if the First Amendment means anything and the Free Exercise Clause means anything, it means that you can't single out religious gatherings and activities for harsher treatment than comparable secular activities.
So what was the substance of the Diocese of Brooklyn's argument before the court?
So I hinted to it in the response to the last question, but basically what we said, really two things, two parts to it. Number one, and a really important piece of it, was that the diocese had been ahead of the curve in terms of fighting COVID and implementing COVID-related safety protocols even before this government in New York had required it. So when COVID first hit New York in a major way in March and April, and basically the city was shut down, including houses of worship, and they were agreed to that, voluntarily did that, the diocese put together a commission headed by Commissioner Joe Esposito, who was the former head of emergency management for New York City and a high-ranking police officer, to look at and put together protocols for all of its churches for what they could and should do to be able to reopen safely. And so they put together a detailed set of requirements and protocols, required masking. They blocked off every other pew so that there would be distance between parishioners. They put a kind of X marks the spot on where in the pew each person could sit. There were ushers that were making sure that people were coming and going and staying apart when they were doing that. they shortened the services. And they implemented all those things in the churches, and there was no COVID spread in any of the diocese churches from when they reopened until this harsh regulation was put in place. And so we said, you know, they've been doing everything right ahead of what the government's requiring. The court even found that they were an exemplar of religious leadership, and yet you're imposing these discriminatory and harsh restrictions that even secular enterprises don't have to comply with. And the combination of those two things, that it's done everything right, ahead of the curve, and been successful, and yet you're putting in place more severe restrictions than anyone else has to abide by, that to us was just too far. And it, you know, the court agreed.
How did the court split on the decision?
So it was interesting. There were six opinions for the nine justices. There was a majority opinion for five justices, what's called a per curiam, because it wasn't issued in any particular justice's name. But the five justices held that the church was likely to succeed on its First Amendment claim. They found, and this is language that I think is really critical and stirring, that even in a pandemic, the Constitution cannot be put away and forgotten. The restrictions at issue, by effectively barring many from attending religious services, strike at the very heart of the First Amendment's guarantee of religious liberty. So that was the main opinion. The majority opinion found that just because it's a pandemic doesn't mean the Constitution goes away. And that was really our big pitch to the court. You know, we're 8 months into this thing. Who knows how long it's going to go on for? And at a certain point, the Constitution has to come back into play. And that point is now, if not before. So that was the majority opinion. Justice Gorsuch had a concurrence in which he agreed with the constitutional violation and the other points of the majority, but he just put a finer point on it, particularly on the pandemic and the relationship between the pandemic and the Constitution. And he said, you know, basically the Constitution can't go on vacation during a pandemic. Again, you know, yes, the government has authority to regulate in public health and to put into place reasonable regulations, but there's always a constitutional check. Our rights are we don't give up our individual rights, we don't give up our free exercise rights just because the government has labeled some regulation pandemic-related. So, you know, he was pressing hard on that and on distinguishing this case from some earlier decisions that the Supreme Court had gone the other way with, not enjoining restrictions on churches, where he felt the restrictions were less severe. You know, it was 100-person maximum, and it was an earlier point in the pandemic when we really didn't know how to fight COVID, what to do, how to safely open, how to safely practice. So the court was a bit more deferential, but he said, look, you know, at this point, we know about masking, distancing, sanitizing. If you're doing all those things, there's really no reason for these harsh restrictions. Justice Kavanaugh had a concurrence as well, which he laid out some separate doctrinal issues, but reached the same result. Interestingly, the Chief Justice dissented, but he indicated that he was with us on the constitutional issue. In other words, that these were severe restrictions that likely did violate the First Amendment, but he would not have issued a decision, an injunction, now because the governor has, and really just days before the court decided, had moved the churches and the synagogues in a parallel case that were at issue out of the red and orange zones, so those 10 and 25-person caps no longer, or at least temporarily, didn't apply. And, you know, our argument, which the court adopted, was that the governor's power to reimpose those restrictions is there, hanging over the church like a sword at its neck at all times. And the governor, I guess you would say curiously, right before the Supreme Court was going to rule, said, hey, wait, there's no churches in a zone. I'm going to remove the churches and the synagogues from the zone so that they're not under these restrictions, and then told the Supreme Court, and therefore you don't have to reach the issue. And we said, that's not how it works. You know, I mean, they've been under these restrictions for months. the governor can reimpose them the next day, and so the court should rule. But the Chief Justice would have waited, essentially, to see if the governor reimposed them. And then there were two additional dissents. I won't go into them in detail, but essentially adopting the city's argument and saying they wouldn't have issued the injunction, both because of that issue that the Chief Justice hit on, the procedural issue, but also because they felt that the restrictions were appropriate, or at least that given the deference to government for public health, the court shouldn't intervene.
So you had mentioned other cases that the court had heard earlier in the pandemic. The New York Times reports that this ruling was at odds with these earlier ones concerning churches in California and Nevada. Tell us a little bit about those cases.
Sure. And I think from the at the outset, I think that's misreported, at least in my view and in the majority opinion's view. There's a sort of narrative that people want to tell, a kind of a very polarized narrative, I guess you would say, that the court ruled 5-4 against the churches in those earlier cases, and now it's just reversed itself with a new justice and ruled 5-4 in the other direction. And that's very much not what was going on. What we argued to the court and what the majority adopted, and I think just the facts tell the truth, was that, as I alluded to earlier, those earlier rulings, that was much earlier in the pandemic. Well, we really didn't know how to fight COVID, how to safely get together in a way that would minimize the spread. There were all kinds of inconsistent guidance about masks, the different guidance about how far apart to be, you know, one had to be, different views about how it was spread, if it was touch, if it was air. We just didn't know. And so what the court said in those earlier cases was, we don't know how this works. You know, it's a dangerous pandemic, and we'll give the government some leeway, some slack, to try to figure it out. But now we're 8 months in. We don't know everything, but we certainly know many things, and we certainly know how one can get together in a safe way, of course, with distancing, with masking, with sanitizing, and all the rest, with capacity restrictions, just not this severe. And so the court looked at that and said, okay, this is a different situation. It's a different time. It's also different restrictions, because these restrictions are 10 people. It's in a red zone, effectively a closure order for the church, versus something where you would have 50 or 100, 200 people in the earlier cases. You know, that's severe too, but it's not nearly as severe. And the court felt that that was just a different case. So, you know, it's not that they ruled differently or they reversed themselves. It's that each case has to be reviewed and taken up on its facts and on the particular restriction at issue and on the context in the world at large in terms of the pandemic. And we're in a different place with different facts, so it ruled differently.
In her dissent, as you had mentioned, Justice Sotomayor, she wrote that the New York COVID restrictions did not treat religious gatherings differently than secular gatherings. How do you respond to that?
So, yeah, you know, look, this is the argument that the state made, that the governor made, that because movie theaters or Broadway shows are closed, whereas a church can have 10 or 25 people, the churches are actually better treated than secular gatherings. I mean, the problem with that is that it's, you know, you're self-selecting a narrow band of activities and saying, look, they're closed, and so churches are better treated. But it ignores all those many other activities, which are also comparable, which were open without any capacity restrictions. So a supermarket, a hardware store, a bodega, you know, all kinds of office buildings that people are in 9-to-5 and close quarters with one another, all were allowed to open in these zones without any capacity restrictions whatsoever. So I think it's, you know, I get the argument in the sense that that's the argument the state tried to make, but it really is looking myopically at the secular activities and ignoring all the ones that are given favorable treatment.
So just a clarification on Chief Justice John Roberts' opinion. You were saying that he essentially said this isn't the time for the court to rule on this particular issue, but if it were the time, he would have sided with the majority.
Yes. Now, He didn't say that in explicit terms. He didn't say it, meaning in the words, I would have sided with the majority. But he did say explicitly that these are severe restrictions that very well might violate the First Amendment, but that he didn't think that there was a need to reach that issue now. So we think, I think it's pretty clear from what he said, that he was signaling that if this case were to reach the court in at a later date, you know, where it wasn't in this unusual emergency appeal context, that he would join the other five, or, you know, that if there was another case from some other state with similar restrictions that, again, didn't have this unusual situation where the governor had tried to moot the case and said that it doesn't apply anymore, that he would be with those other five. And I think that's really important because of this kind of storyline that it was just a flip from Justice Coney Barrett joining instead of Justice Ginsburg, and that's what got you from 5-4 one way to 5-4 the other way. But it's you know, really not the case at all. You know, on the substance, we had at least six of the justices, including Justice Roberts, who was on the other side before, because he recognized this is different here.
So you're saying that really the presence of Justice Amy Coney Barrett was not material in the court's decision here?
Well, I guess, you know, in the specific result here, it was material in the sense that the Chief Justice didn't feel that there was the time to reach the decision or to issue a decision. But it wasn't material, or it's not accurate to say that it's just her joining the court and that's what changed. The court just flipped because of a new justice, because the Chief Justice was clearly signaling that his earlier opinions, where he had not enjoined these restrictions, were in that unique and separate context I talked about, and that now that we're in a different stage of the pandemic and certainly with different, more severe restrictions, he would be on the other side. So, you know, I guess it's complicated, but it's not accurate and the storyline isn't correct, that all of the justices on the one side stuck to their position and on the other stuck to their position, and only the change in justices made all the difference.
How has Governor Cuomo reacted to the court's decision?
So he's said, he had a press conference a day or two later in which he said that the decision was irrelevant because none of the churches and the houses, the synagogues are currently in those red and orange zones. You know, and look, if that's how it stays and they continue not to be in the red and orange zones, then great. They're not under those restrictions. We have the injunction, and he isn't trying to apply it to the churches. But like I said, he maintains the absolute and complete discretion and unchecked discretion at any time to put any neighborhood into a red or an orange zone. So it's very much not irrelevant in that if not for this injunction, that there would be this threat at all times that any church, any house of worship could be put into those restrictive caps. Now that we have this injunction, that's not possible.
What does this decision mean, if anything, for religious gatherings nationwide?
Yeah, it's very important, and there's the particulars of the case, you know, New York and its restrictions, and of course it's important for that, for my client, the Roman Catholic Diocese of Brooklyn, and for the churches and synagogues and mosques and temples all throughout New York, but it has much bigger ramifications as well, because what the court is doing here is really laying out for state governments going forward, local governments, and for the lower courts, the rules of the road in terms of restrictions and regulations on religious activities, particularly for the indefinite duration of the pandemic. Because until this decision came out, you know, until Wednesday evening at 11:48 p.m. on the eve of Thanksgiving, the courts had essentially given carte blanche to local and state governments to impose any and all restrictions including on religious activities, religious worship, and services, and they looked to the Supreme Court's earlier decisions that we had discussed as signing off on that. And so those decisions have been cited, I think, over 100 times, and challenges were essentially a dead letter. I mean, there was just, there was really nowhere to go, no matter how severe the restrictions were in any court, where they wouldn't just say, well, the Supreme Court signed off on it, it's a pandemic, so too bad. And so this decision is really a landmark because it puts the Constitution back in the conversation, in the center of the conversation, where it belongs, where it always belongs. And courts now will look to this decision when there's a challenge or religious adherents, you know, organizations, worshipers will look to this decision when they're faced with the decision whether to sue or whether to fight the state and local government restrictions and say, okay, look, here the Supreme Court has made clear that in the pandemic the Constitution can't be put away and forgotten. It doesn't slumber. It protects us at all times and all places. And if there are restrictions that are severe, that are discriminatory, that treat religious adherents differently and more disparately than secular businesses or other secular activities, then now we have this decision to turn to cite as precedent, to rely on in order to challenge those kinds of restrictions.
How do you explain what many perceive to be the singling out of religious gatherings by the restrictions, not only in New York, but in other places as well? Why the perceived ill treatment of specifically religious gatherings under these restrictions?
Yeah, it's hard to know for sure, obviously. I guess I'm an optimist or somebody who tries to give people the benefit of the doubt. I think that there's both a lack of understanding of the importance and centrality of religious activities and worship by some people out there in the world. And they may not have ill will, but if they themselves are not religiously oriented, I think, unfortunately, it's just seen as something that people do, that people like to do. It's another activity, and not given its pride of place, you know, as a protected First Amendment right, like free speech and due process and all the rest. So I think that's part of it, is people just, you know, if one is not oneself religious, it's not given the kind of protections that it should. And then the other piece of it is just a misunderstanding, I think, and a kind of caricature of what a religious service or activity is. And we see this even in the reaction to this decision from the Supreme Court, because even though our clients, like I said, were ahead of the curve and imposed mask and social distancing and sanitizing requirements, even though they voluntarily did that before the state government, even though they have maintained that we've maintained throughout the entire litigation that no matter what happens in the litigation, they're going to continue doing all those things, you still see people reacting and saying, look, the Supreme Court's authorizing religious people to kill their family members, and, you know, the churches are going to become killing fields and all this stuff. And it's like, it's disconnected from the reality of the fact that the vast majority of religious people, like secular people, just want to go worship, go about their lives in a safe way during this pandemic, and that they're very much ready, willing, and able to comply with all the medical guidance and do everything necessary to do it safely. So I think people also just, again, have a caricature of what religious people are and maybe don't appreciate the significant steps that they have taken, the vast majority of religious organizations that people have taken, to make sure that the activities that they are doing, their religious activities, are able to be done in a safe and appropriate and prudent way.
Akiva Shapiro is litigation partner at Gibson Dunn, the law firm that represented the Diocese of Brooklyn before the U.S. Supreme Court. Akiva, thank you very much for your time.
Sure. Thank you. My pleasure. It's great talking to you.
When we come back, it's part two of our weekly series, Through the Old Testament in a Church Year. We're going to be talking about Old Testament prophet Noah. Dr. Ken Scherer will be our guest.
Is your school or homeschool ready to take the next step in teaching students with learning challenges? We can help. The Simply Classical curriculum, voted number one for special learners, is available from Memoria Press for students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome. We provide everything you need for a full year. Use promo code LPR21 at simplyclassical.com. Simplyclassical.com.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
For nearly 140 years, the Lutheran Witness has taught the faith, defended it against error, and shown forth the great treasures of the Lutheran Church and biblical doctrine. We're continuing this legacy by publishing issues and articles that help you see the world from a Lutheran perspective and that teach biblical doctrine and show forth the treasures of God's Word. Visit our website to learn more and how to subscribe, witness.lcms.org. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Do you want your neighbors and community to see what you're celebrating this Christmas season? Why not display an outdoor nativity in front of your home or church? It's a great way to show others what Christmas is all about, the birth of our Savior, Jesus Christ. Check out the Outdoor Nativity Store at OutdoorNativityStore.com. Durable, affordable, and American-made nativities. OutdoorNativityStore.com. OutdoorNativityStore.com.